Somali youth are at the front line of Britain's war on terror. The security services are targeting and infiltrating their community and pressurizing young Somalis to spy on each other.
They're beginning to hate police and to say, why are they victimizing us? It's continuous harassment and stop and search and, you know, follow-up calls and trying to meet them and saying, we know where you live.
The government believes that some young Somalis are going to fight for the Al-Qaeda-affiliated Al-Shabaab group. And they fear they might come back to the British mainland to commit terrorism.
When young minds are poisoned by radicalism and they go on to export terrorism and extremism, the security of the whole world, including people here in Britain, is at stake.
But are the security services casting their net too wide? Are they radicalizing a whole community by their aggressive coercion tactics? And what will be the consequences? The Somali community here in the UK numbers in around the hundreds of thousands. Most live in London, but there are also major populations in other major British cities such as Birmingham, Manchester and Sheffield. Many Somalis came here to the UK to flee the brutal civil war, which has ripped their country apart over the past few decades. But once here, many have found life anything but easy. Young Somalis come to this community centre in East London several evenings a week to socialise with their peers and elders. Many have got mixed up with gangs and low-level crime and will be getting into trouble on the streets if it weren't for this temporary refuge. Here they have something constructive to do, something which fills their time and gives them direction.
This place is a very good place for young people to be coming here every time. Like all my friends, all my brothers come here every time to waste time a lot, play game. By the time it finishes, the run finishes around 10 o'clock, everyone goes to go home.
And if this place didn't exist, what would happen?
Probably be on the road, fighting a lot, terrorizing people. Probably on the public buses, especially the 16, 17-year-olds that's here now.
These boys and young men are streetwise. Their area is dominated by deprived estates, bad schools, gang culture and knife crime. And they have a fractious relationship with the authorities, especially the police who often stop and search them for knives.
What's the problem with the police?
They obviously, we get sub search on a regular basis for no reason. They think we've got knives and stuff on us for no reason. And then that's it, we just get harassed by them.
Why do they do that?
Because we roll in groups, we roll in big, large groups.
Does it happen all the time? How often does it happen?
Every 2 days. We get every 2 days.
How old were you when it happened to you the first time?
Must be 13.
I mean, are you guys carrying knives or what?
They're not finding any when they search us, so what do I say?
How does that make you feel, getting stopped and searched all the time? When
it makes us paranoid, doesn't it? Obviously, every second, every time we're looking over our shoulder, we think we're going to get someone searched.
Imagine there's a group of us over there, and there's a group of white youths over there. They'll come stop and search us.
Because of the colour of your skin?
Yeah, the colour of our skin.
Yeah, I mean, also, I've been hearing stories about the police, asking Somalis to, spy on each other. Have you heard those stories or not?
Yeah, I think I have. In the area, they've quite a lot of Somalis watching what other Somalis do.
Really?
Yeah.
So even within your own community, there's you don't trust each other?
No. Don't trust no one.
The sense of grievance amongst Somali youth is palpable. Some of these young men feel the obstacles in their way to succeeding in life are huge. Others are more optimistic. But all feel that if they do succeed, it'll be in spite of the authorities rather than because of them. Ibrahim Sincere's parents are from Mogadishu. He's a student and spoken word artist who writes poetry about the issues facing black and Muslim communities in the UK. He feels that Somali youth face a double discrimination in Britain.
Somalis are black and Muslim, and there's a lot of policies that target the black community, and then there's a lot of policies, or even policing policies, that target the Muslim community. And Somalis are black and Muslim.
Ibrahim, like every other Somali I met during the course of this documentary, is also concerned about the confrontational relationship between Somali youth and the police.
It's a psychological war, and I think that a lot of non-white people are very they feel very discriminated against, and their own worth or their own value is being attacked a lot as well. And I think psychologically, when someone's value is being attacked a lot, or someone's self-worth is being put under scrutiny, that person may look for someone else that he can kind of transfer the weight onto.
Somali youths have split identities. On the one hand, many are born and bred in Britain and they're marginalised from mainstream British society. On the other hand, many identify very strongly with back home and express a longing to go back there. But back home is a very troubled place indeed. Somalia has been without an effective central government since 1991. Years of fighting between rival warlords and an inability to deal with famine and disease have led to the deaths of up to 1 million people. In 2004, the main warlords and politicians signed a deal to set up a new parliament, but the weak administration has faced a formidable task in bringing reconciliation to a country divided into clan fiefdoms. The Western and African Union-backed government is struggling to achieve stability in the face of persistent attacks by the Al-Shabaab group, which declared allegiance to Al-Qaeda in 2012. Meanwhile, war and poverty have led to the mass exodus of Somalis to surrounding countries and to the West, including the UK. As for the British government, they've become very interested in this Horn of African nation, on the face of it due to the threat of international terrorism and piracy. But many believe the huge energy reserves that lie off the coast of Somalia may have something to do with it. Britain's interest in Somalia was on display at this London conference in May 2013, where major nations came together to agree practical measures to support the Somali government's plans in security, justice, and public financial management.
Today, I think we are seeing the beginnings of a new future for Somalia. Extremism is in retreat. AMISOM, together with Somali and Ethiopian forces, have driven Al-Shabaab out of town after town. Piracy attacks are down by 80%, with no vessel attacked so far this year.
We need support, we need assistance and investment, and we need protection from those who try to knock us over.
Government is moving ahead. Under the guidance of the UN and the African Union and IGAD, the transitional government that lasted 8 years has ended, and now there is a proper, legitimate and federal government in its place.
But outside the conference, not everyone was singing from the same hymn sheets. Hundreds of Somalis living here in the UK have turned up to protest about the Somalia conference that's taking place here in Lancaster House in London. Some are warning about British imperialism in the region, while others are saying that the President of Somalia, Britain's major ally, is pursuing a clan-based agenda in the country.
The reason I'm here today is to show my feeling, to talk about the unity of Somalia. That's the main message. We want to be united. We don't want our country to be divided into two or three or four.
Somali community, they want to go back to Somalia. Everybody had enough. Where is the people back him killing? Nobody want to stay here. It's a very weird country. The culture is different. The village is different. Everything in here is different. Everybody want to be Somalia so they can go back home.
Do you trust Britain's intentions in Somalia?
I do trust them, but at the same time, is UK government, they don't know nothing about Somalia. So that's why we're telling the Somali president to bring all clients to the table.
What was apparent from this demonstration was that Somalis in the UK are mistrustful of Britain's intentions and are divided over the political direction of their country. Many wanted to go home to help build the nation, but most felt the country was still too unstable. All, however, emphasise that Somali culture and religion is moderate and that Al-Shabaab's extreme Salafi Takfiri ideology was something alien to their nation. They also downplayed the number of young Somalis who were attracted to Al-Qaeda and who were willing to travel to Somalia to fight for Al-Shabaab. But one British Somali who stands accused of aiding and abetting al-Shabaab is Mahdi Hashi, a 23-year-old who's now awaiting a terrorism trial in the United States. Hashi's family became worried in 2012 when their son, who'd gone to Somalia to get married, disappeared from view. Later, it emerged that he'd been detained and allegedly tortured in neighboring Djibouti by the CIA, before being rendered to the United States. In the meantime, he was stripped of his British citizenship.
Mahdi was a very polite boy from his childhood. He was someone who always helps the community. He used to go for his studies and he never had any problem from his childhood. I remember some of his schoolmates used to call to say that he's a comedian. You know, he was someone who was always happy, who makes friends easily.
Sagir Hussein is Mahdi Hashi's lawyer. He says he's fighting the case with one arm tied behind his back because he doesn't have access to some of the evidence against his client, as it's being held on national security grounds.
We've got to remember that deprivation has led him to be in secret detention for a number of months in a jail in Djibouti. From there, he's been threatened torture, he's witnessed torture, and then, without any due process whatsoever, he's been renditioned or, say, kidnapped and sent off to the United States for some bizarre reason, facing a trial in New York court.
Hashi was a community worker and student who worked with Somali youths in London. Friends described him as religious but not extremist. They say that other Somali youth looked up to him and he even played the peacemaker between rival gangs. His lawyers say that because of this influence, he was targeted by the security services, who wanted him to spy for them, specifically to try and get his peer group to talk about jihad. He said no.
I think this coincided with a lot of it with the way the foreign policy of Britain and America was turning towards the Horn of Africa. So it seems that these young lads are inadvertently caught up in something that's a much wider foreign policy issue. And for Mehdi, certainly, it's absolutely sort of, you know, tragic consequences for him.
All I can say that is Mahdi was someone who was practicing, he was a practicing Muslim. And usually children at this age, from that age, they usually drop out of school and, you know, they join gangs, or, you know, they smoke on the streets. But Mahdi was different from them. So maybe they thought of taking the advantage of that.
Human rights campaigners believe that Mahdi Hashi was rendered to the United States because no European country would have convicted him because of lack of evidence. However, the conviction rate for Muslims caught up in terrorism cases in the United States is 100%. So the implicit message to Somalis in Britain is, don't oppose British foreign policy, or you might end up like Mahdi Hashi.
He was captured in African state, and he is a British citizen. Why was he transported all that to the States? If there must be something else going on.
Despite the fact that Mahdi Hashi was born in the UK, the British government seems to completely wash their hands of him. On the face of it, they do seem to have to answer quite a few embarrassing questions. For example, what was their role in his kidnapping, secret detention, and ultimate rendition to the United States? But because they've stripped him of his citizenship, they can avoid answering these questions. My interest in making this documentary stemmed from this public meeting in central London in early 2013. The majority of people here were Somalis, and the issues raised were all to do with MI5 blackmail and the targeting of the community. The aim was to empower British Somalis to come up with a cohesive strategy to counter the harassment. The message was, don't be afraid to speak out, don't be victims. And this is also Abuka Awale's message. He works with British Somali youth and has his own TV show on the Somali channel, where he tries to keep young people on the straight and narrow.
If you are Somali and you go, it doesn't matter where you go, as long as you land in Heathrow Airport, you are expected to be taken on the side. Not only search by his bags and who you are, But they will have your details and there is follow-up calls and they want you to maybe to have a tea. What is the tea for? And before you know, they will try to push you to say, we want you to become, work with us. And that's what the young people have been complaining so much about.
Awali recognises that the government has a duty to protect national security, but thinks that making an enemy out of a whole community isn't the way to go about doing that.
There are extremists everywhere. Obviously, we cannot deny the fact that Al-Shabaab is in Somalia and they're using similar approaches. But what security services are concerned about, those Al-Shabaabs coming here. We don't have Al-Shabaabs here. We rather have we have boys who are more Arsenal fans rather than Al-Shabaab fans.
What would you have the government do?
Working with the community, winning hearts and minds of young people and encouraging them to report crime, encouraging them to work with the police, to trust the police. I don't think no young, single, whether young and old, Somalis want to see London being blown away by terrorists. But if the police and security services are victimizing me and making me feel that I am a terrorist, which I am not, then they are pushing me to become a terrorist.
But amid all the doom and gloom, there are signs that the Somali community is trying to channel itself in a positive way. This youth event in the Small Heath area of Birmingham is a bit of light relief for these young Somalis, who might otherwise be on the streets getting up to no good. This sometimes raucous night of singing, rap and comedy is designed to remind them of their roots and their culture.
I mean, there's nothing better than being back home where you belong, because even I, living here for like over 10 years right now, I'm still an outcast. This is not my country. This is not my world. My country right now is Somalia, but it needs to, you know, be fixed. And until then, I'm a foreigner here.
When I was young, the police used to pick us up. I've even got put into a bully van myself, which is a police car, and I've got battered for no reason because I was a Somalian. The only thing he was saying, you effing Somalian, effing Somalian, and he was punching me in my face. I mean, when we tell the police this, they're not going to believe us because it's their word against our word, and they're not going to believe us. And there's no one we can really turn to and say, look, we need this help.
The organisers of this event say that more funding is needed for community initiatives such as this, to make young Somalis feel wanted and to give them some direction in life.
I think the only way to break that cycle is to communicate better, both from the Somali community and obviously the law. They need to find a way to meet halfway, you know. Obviously, I can't say every Somali person is clean and, you know, has no record and is good, but same as I can't say every Somali person is bad either. So I think they need to find that common ground where they're able to understand each other.
I'm Somalian, end of the day. I'm Somalian. I'll always be a Somalian. But by papers, I might be something else. So what I'm trying to say is, end of the day, whatever, I know that I'm going to be going back home. If I don't, I know my kids will be. So that's what we're trying to tell them. Don't forget what you are.
And that's your ultimate goal, is it, to go back home?
Yes. I would do anything to go back home, especially when it's peace.
MI5 don't make public statements, so they won't respond directly to the accusations levelled against them in this programme. However, they do say that Al-Qaeda-inspired terrorism is the main threat to Britain's national security. They also specifically deny targeting Muslims, arguing that Muslims themselves are victims of Al-Qaeda-inspired terrorism.
Seen from the British government's and the security services' point of view, British Muslims are the most susceptible to the kind of ideology which saw 52 people killed on July the 7th, 2005 in London. The kind of ideology which thirsts for revenge for Britain's invasions of two Muslim countries in the last decade, and its support for dictators in the Muslim world as well as for Israel. More recently, the killing of a British soldier in South London in May 2013 posed serious questions about the ideology of British Muslims who try to travel to Somalia, as the chief suspect allegedly did. But Michael Adebelajo also had contact with the security services, indicating that those who attempt to travel to Somalia are closely watched and perhaps also recruited.
There is absolutely no justification for these acts, and the fault for them lies solely and purely with the sickening individuals who carried out this appalling attack.
Well, let's be clear what the responsibilities of the security service are. They are to counter terrorism. There are several other responsibilities. Their task is to identify potential suspects, and then when there is sufficient evidence, to place them under surveillance, and ultimately to save lives. It's not just saving lives in the United Kingdom or elsewhere, it's saving Muslim lives as well.
MI5 clearly believes that Britain faces a growing threat of terrorist attacks from UK residents trained in Somalia, a failed state where Al-Qaeda-affiliated groups have the space to thrive. They estimate that over 100 British residents are training in Al-Shabaab camps to fight the Western and African Union-backed governments. But MI5 is concerned that it's only a matter of time before these highly trained fighters come back home to attack British interests. And it wants to act before this happens rather than after an attack takes place. During the course of this documentary, I've had quite a few problems penetrating the Somali community, despite the fact that I'm a Muslim myself and I've got a track record of making sympathetic films about Muslim communities in the UK. There seems to be quite a lot of concern and distrust about the way that Somalis are portrayed in the media, and there also seems to be quite a lot of fear of speaking out, because if you do that, you might be targeted. For all the Somalis that agreed to appear on camera for this documentary, many more refused because they feared being targeted. Yet off the record, they all confirmed that the community feels harassed and intimidated, and that can only store up problems for the future.
Once you come camera and you said, well, I'm going to talk about terrorism, they will say, no, if this can get me into trouble, if I say anything, the police may come to my house. Said, we know what you say. I don't think that's a good idea for the Somali community. I think they should come forward and speak up. But I can understand their concerns. I can understand how afraid they are.
The feedback you receive from people who have been victims or people who have had interaction with the police or the security services, it's certainly that, you know, what we can say is that this is not helping the social cohesion agenda at all.
There's also a sense of frustration that the authorities just aren't listening to the Somali community's concerns. And that is why some members of the community are finally going public. Their reasoning is that the softly approach has failed, so now it's time to speak out.
Do you think there's anything wrong with them trying to get spies in the community?
In fact, that has to come within the person. You know, it has to be your own will, whether you want to work for them or not. That's not the way to approach and recruit people.
I mean, if a young Somali was approached by the security services and didn't want to talk to them, what advice would you give to that young Somali?
I'd say, look, contact a lawyer. And there are many lawyers in this field who will give advice. There's an organisation that I advise called Cage Prisoners. We deal with these situations. But certainly do not deal with them on your own. And also, you know, if you feel we're constantly harassed, there are avenues of complaint available.
I spent the last few months with the Somali community in the UK, and I've been researching their relationship with the British state. And my impression is that it's a long way from the Al-Shabaab stereotype that some commentators like to portray. Yes, they do suffer from the same kind of problems that deprived immigrant communities in Britain suffer from, such as low-level crime, deprivation, Islamophobia and racism. But they also seem naturally religiously moderate and therefore not susceptible to extremist Al-Qaeda type ideology. That said, there is a war raging in their homeland, and some young Somalis may feel that it's their duty to go back and fight. Some of them might end up fighting for Al-Shabaab. But does that justify the British state casting the net so wide that effectively they're targeting a whole community? I don't think it does.